players from Stanford, South Carolina, Louisville, and UConn women's college basketball teams are arriving in Minneapolis today after securing their spots as the final four squads competing in the NCAA National Championship this weekend. While the term March Madness has long been associated with the men's college tournament, this is the first time the women have also been able to use this well-known branding. It's fitting, given this year is the 50th anniversary of Title IX, the law that, at least by design, sought to remove sex-based obstacles to being able to learn and work as we choose. And we'd love to hear from you. What does Title IX mean to you? Do you think we have made progress in this area? Do you remember what it was like before? 1-800-642-1234. Email us, ideas@WPR.org. To reflect on this moment in history, we're joined by Mary Jo Kane. She's Professor Emerita at the School of Kinesiology, the University of Minnesota. She's also the Director Emerita of the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport. Mary Jo, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much, Molly. I am delighted to be here on what I know will be a very exciting week in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, so tell us what the mood is like there in Minneapolis.
Well, it's been pretty crazy. We're quite proud. You know, it's a very competitive bid to try to get the Final Four at all. And the fact that we found out that we not only got the Final Four, but that the University of Minnesota would be hosting the Final Four in the 50th anniversary of Title IX, it's been pretty crazy. And then I'm assuming many of your listeners last night, and maybe you did too, Molly, watched the double overtime thriller between UConn and the University of UNC, North Carolina State. And I bring that up only because the clutch player of the game was Paige Beckers, who is from Hopkins, Minnesota. So hometown girl makes good and comes back. And I can assure you that ESPN, who is carrying the Final Four, couldn't be more thrilled to have great matchups with great superstars and great programs and coaches. I mean, you couldn't have a better lineup than UConn against the defending champion Stanford in the kickoff game Friday night.
Well, and I want to talk a little bit about how we got here. And one of the things that stood out to me in thinking about this is the situation that we were in last year. So I want to play a short clip. A player from the Oregon women's team, Sedona Prince, posting a video to TikTok comparing the tournament weight rooms between the men and the women. Here's an excerpt from that video.
So for the NCAA March Madness, the biggest tournament in college basketball for women, this is our weight room. Let me show y'all the men's weight room. Now, when pictures of our weight room got released versus the men's, the NCAA came out with a statement saying that it wasn't money, it was space that was a problem. Let me show y'all something else. Here's our practice court, right? And then here's that weight room. And then here's all this extra space. If you aren't upset about this problem, then you're a part of it.
Now, on the video, for the folks that remember, there were several seconds where Prince was, she was panning the phone camera around a men's gym full of weights and equipments, as compared to the women's gym, which was just this small stack of hand weights and a few yoga mats. What impact do you think that video, Prince's video, had on this event?
Well, it was invaluable. And it was another data point in when you started out, Molly, by asking me, how did we get here? One of the things that I talk about in terms of how far we've come as we approach the second generation of post-Title IX is that unlike I was a young tomboy who grew up in central Illinois in the 50s and 60s, where there were no sports for me. And what Title IX did was change the calculation totally, so that young women today, for the first time in our history, grow up with a sense of entitlement to sports. They're not just happy to be there. They are outraged when they see that they are being treated differently. And that data point, which frankly shamed, which is really hard to do, some of your listeners may know, it's really hard to shame and embarrass the NCAA, there was such a backlash to the unequal treatment that the situation was immediately resolved, and the NCAA has fallen all over itself, letting everybody know as we approach this year's March Madness that everything is equal, equal, equal. It's really similar to what happened with Megan Rapinoe and the Women's World Cup soccer team.
Yes.
When they were used the World Cup soccer games as a way to argue for pay equity and bring that issue to the fore, because women today, as I said, feel a sense of entitlement, and that has never happened, and it wouldn't have happened without Title IX.
But are things equal today?
No. In a word, no. But you always, when I'm asked that question, Molly, what I think about is, well, what is our baseline of comparison? And this is not to say that women should not continue to push for equality any more than people shouldn't continue to push for any kind of equality, racial equality, social justice in all realms. But if your baseline of comparison is where we were before Title IX, our cup runneth over. Because as I said, for young girls like me, there were no teams, let alone scholarships. And today, it wouldn't occur to any young girl, and many of the women that I taught as Division I athletes at the University of Minnesota, it would never occur to them that if they wanted to play and they were good enough and they were willing to pay the price, that an opportunity would not be there. So that's been resolved. That's sort of settled law, if you will. But no, women still don't get anywhere near the treatment, the media coverage, and the money that the men do. But that's changing with each generation.
What do you see as the next frontier? I mean, as you mentioned, the law may be there, but the resources don't necessarily follow. And these are still issues that are litigated over. I mean, as you mentioned, the U.S. Women's soccer team suing over. So what's the next frontier here?
I think the next big frontier will be the issues around trans athletes and how that's going to play out. And I was talking to Tim, your producer, before I came on, and he just told me that the state legislature in Utah overrode the governor's veto of the trans law that will ban trans athletes from participating throughout the state. And the very first thing that I said to him was, and I presume that a lawsuit will soon follow. So I think that we're going to have a lot of that happening. And, you know, again, this is going to be a brave new world. It is a little bit ironic, Molly, as I've thought about this issue quite a bit over the last few weeks, especially with Leah Thompson, the trans woman swimmer being in the news who swims for Penn. You know, the whole point of Title IX was to increase opportunities for women. And now I think we're going to have a bunch of lawsuits trying to actually prevent trans women from participating with women. So that seems to be quite an ironic twist, and certainly something that lawmakers in 1972 could never have envisioned. But I think that's the next sort of brave new world, if you will, where we're going.
So how do you see Title IX being used in these lawsuits?
Well, the whole point, and again, I want to just stress that I'm not a lawyer or a legal scholar, but as I'm seeing this play out and people sort of jockeying for positions, on the one hand, you have trans athletes and their advocates saying, this is all about equity, and I should have the right and the opportunity to participate because sports is all about inclusion. And then you have the other side with, again, to me, ironically, women athletes saying, no, we want to, not all women athletes, I want to be really clear about that, but certainly a sizable number of female athletes and their advocates who are now starting to talk about lawsuits to try to ban trans women from participating. I think it's going to get played out in the courts. It's certainly going to get played out in the various voices that are, frankly, taking up sides. And I don't have any idea where this is headed. Maybe some of your listeners do.
Well, and we hope to hear from them. We're talking with Mary Jo Kane, Professor Emerita at the School of Kinesiology, the University of Minnesota, talking about the Title IX impacts on the weekend's Final Four of the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship Tournament. We want to hear what you think. 1-800-642-1234. Did you participate in women's sports at any level? What was your experience like? Did you give much thought to Title IX? Give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Molly Stenson for Rob Ferret. We're speaking with Title IX expert Mary Jo Kane, Professor Emerita at the University of Minnesota. We're talking about the history, the impact, the future of Title IX and women's sports. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234. Well, Mary Jo, you were starting to unpack the issue of transgender athletes and fairness in competition. You mentioned you're not a lawyer. I understand that, but how do you see this conversation playing out? As we've seen, you know, legislatures across the country putting forth legislation to try to curtail opportunities or restrict athletes from participating. What are you looking at when you watch these debates?
Well, I'm watching what the various constituencies and advocacy groups, including women athletes, are talking about. At the risk of being a little political here, you're right to say that a number of states are now taking up legislation. I think there's going to be a strong correlation between the states that do that and how conservative and, frankly, Republican-controlled states those are. One fear that I have is that trans athletes and this whole issue will become a cudgel for the right to, frankly, try to make trans athletes the boogeymen and women that they are not. Even though I do think that there are very legitimate, personally think, there are very legitimate questions about fairness and equity. We are in, as I said, a brave new world. The science is by no means set. And I think that the sort of key takeaway for me is what we're trying to do here, Molly, is really find the sweet spot, if you will, between two very important competing interests. On the one hand, and nobody knows this more than those who care about women's sports, we want to be inclusive and diverse and have sports be a playground, if you will, for opportunity, not just about sports, but what sports can do for you. On the other hand, sports, especially at elite levels, is all about fairness in competition. And if one person is seen to have a competitive advantage biologically or physiologically, then is that fair? And that's where the rubber will hit the road here in terms of how this will ultimately be decided. And I quite frankly think it might even be decided at the federal level, mm-hmm, because the stakes are so high, and to have a uniform standard of participation. Mm-hmm. But if anybody says they know where this going, they know where this is going, I think they're being disingenuous, because, as I said before, we are in a brave new world that nobody anticipated.
It's moving fast.
Yes, very fast.
So I want to go to the phones. We've got calls coming in for you, and I want to go first to Shauna, where we've got Maddie on the line. Good afternoon.
Hi. Glad you could take my call.
What's on your mind?
I guess I would have to say that God bless Title IX should probably be on an epitaph for many of the people who went through that era. I went to high school where there were no women's sports. There was something called GAA, Girls Athletic Association, and we would have such an exciting Saturday if we had a play day at one of the colleges. So then I went to college, and I thought I'd died and gone to heaven because there was women's sports. I took the job in Shawano in 1965. We had no women's, 1969. We had no women's sports, and it was like pulling teeth to get that to happen, and it did gradually. Eventually, Well, I think one of the big turnarounds was in 1973-74. Our volleyball team won the very first state championship of Wisconsin.
Wow.
And when we were coming back to Sano, except for the parents, there were no cars in the parking lot or anything like that.
Yeah.
In 1988, we were fortunate enough to win it again. And the amount of support had changed drastically. A 47-car caravan from Bondwell. The parking lot was full. The gym was full. We had gained a tremendous amount of respect and reputation.
Maddie, so, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. And, you know, I imagine, Mary Jo Cane, that you have heard so many stories like this from women across the country throughout your work.
Oh, forever and ever and ever. And I just as Maddie began her comment with God bless Title IX, I would like to say God bless Maddie and all of the women who came before. You could just hear the excitement in her voice because it shows so many women who wanted to play sports, who love sports, and who care deeply about sports. And the great thing about Title IX, Molly, is that after, again, decades of being told that girls didn't want to play sports, and even if they did, they wouldn't be any good, the thing that was great about Title IX is that we built them ballparks and playing fields all over this country, and sometimes women like Maddie had to, like, break the doors down. But we're here, we're in unprecedented numbers, and I would urge Maddie and anybody else who wants to drive over to Twin Cities this weekend, it's a sellout. But maybe you can get a ticket on the street. But there is enormous interest. And as I said, God bless Maddie and all those people in Wisconsin who paved the way for all of us.
Well, I want to go back to the phones now. We've got Elizabeth joining us from Madison. Good afternoon.
Hi, Molly. First time caller, long time listener. And I grew up with Title IX, so I'm really grateful to Mary Jo and all the women who fought for this. And I love sports. I'm calling because I want to know who you're picking to win the Final Four, Mary Jo. And are you excited about Don Staley?
Oh, my God. Don, you want to talk about a legend. Elizabeth, if you don't mind, I probably should take the fifth on who I think will win. But I don't know. Did you watch the game last night between the University of Connecticut and NC State that went into double overtime? I mean, I don't know. Here's what
amazing.
I think. Say it again.
It was amazing.
And Paige Beckers, yeah. Sorry to be a homer here, Elizabeth, but Paige Beckers is from right outside the Twin Cities. So if you're a fan of women's sports and women's basketball in particular, Elizabeth, which you clearly are, you could not ask for a better lineup. I mean, think about this. Tara Vanderveer and the defending champions Stanford against Gino Auriemma and Paige Beckers. And then speaking of Dawn Staley, right, iconic coach who brought South Carolina out of nowhere. And then Louisville, who's been there. I don't know. But Elizabeth, at the risk of being, I don't know, who are you picking? Come on.
It's hard because I like a dynasty, but I also like the underdog.
Yep.
Which leaves you with what, Louisville? So, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where I don't care who wins because there is just such joy watching people play.
Yes. Joy is absolutely right. And you are talking about some enormously talented women and coaches and legends and traditions. And again, we would not be here without Title IX. And I couldn't be more proud and lucky and filled with gratitude that the Final Four is here this weekend.
And I want to squeak in one last call. We've got Becky on the line from Beaver Dam. Becky, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, what's on your mind?
Well, hey, I just wanted to give a little bit of feedback also on Title IX and how important that is to me, I guess. And having grown up, hearing I was involved in sports and a lot of basketball, volleyball, softball, and track and such. But my mom would talk often about having – she played basketball when she was growing up, and would talk about how, you know, the girls could only run half court because they weren't, they didn't feel that girls could run full court at that time. And so it just really, it kind of always stuck in my mind how I appreciated the opportunities that I had. And I thought my high school coach did a great job where, in high school, he brought in graduated players and would
Becky,
talk to them. And
I so hate to do this, but we are up against the clock, and I want to get Mary Jo to respond to you. So, Mary Jo, we've just got a minute left.
Yeah, and I'll try to be obviously brief. But, Becky, again, I want to thank you and for talking about your mother and for all of the ways in which Title IX has made such a difference over the generations, Molly. And as I am asked, as I often am, as we approach the 50th anniversary of Title IX, and I am sure this is true about the great state of Wisconsin and the women who have called in have made that clear. And this is what the impact of Title IX has really been. And that is, in two generations, we've gone from young girls like me and Maddie and Elizabeth all over this country hoping that there is a team to young girls all over this country today hoping that they make the team. And that's the difference because of Title IX.
Thank you, Mary Jo Kane. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. And again, thank you for inviting me, and go Final Four.
Mary Jo Kane, Professor Emerita at the School of Kinesiology at the University of Minnesota. We were speaking about legacy of Title IX and women's sports today.